Chapter 8. The Truth-Seeker delegation arrived via royal airship with T'Challa. Formalities were exchanged. Sayathna and her Prowler delegation commandeered a stateroom to have a debrief with the Truth-Seekers, at which point M'Baku cut T'Challa out from the herd to discuss state matters. T'Challa was amused as they made their way up the narrow stairs to the roost. "People will think that you're trying to get me alone." M'Baku shot a pointed glance over his shoulder at the Dormilajian primes trailing behind them.
"For a given value of alone, O King, did you really have to bring a war dog along?"
"You approved the delegation list."
"It's not exactly politic for me to pick and choose, is it? Especially when Palesa approved my list instantly."
T'Challa chuckled. "You make such a good show of not caring about tribal politics. But you do."
"Of course I do. I wouldn't be a good leader if I didn't. We care about every aspect of Wakandan politics, even the parts that don't appear to have any relation to the Jabari. Don't the others?"
"Nakia told me that she felt the Jabari have a different, secret agenda. Hopefully now that she's here again for less trying reasons, she'll change her mind." Nakia had better instincts than her king. M'Baku shrugged.
"As long as she understands that she'd be more closely watched than the others. Nothing personal. She's a spy."
At least T'Challa had the grace not to deny that. "Of course." They left the Dormilaje and the Primes in the stairwell, ascending to the roost alone. T'Challa pushed M'Baku back toward the stone once they were on the viewing platform, and M'Baku let himself be pushed. The stone was cold through his armor as T'Challa leaned up on the balls of his feet for a kiss. M'Baku curled his arm around T'Challa's waist. It felt strange to step outside time like this, to kiss someone whose name held as much weight as M'Baku's own. "Complications," Ngozi would have said, laughing. "Hanuman loves complications." He kneaded T'Challa's ass through his sleek jacket, chuckling as T'Challa groaned and thrust eagerly against M'Baku's thigh. "I don't think we have the time," T'Challa said, though he was grinning slyly, a hunting grin. M'Baku sniffed and kissed it away, trying to stay quiet, conscious of the Primes and Dormilaje not far off. Fingertips curled into his hair, stroking over his throat, running teasingly over the edges of his wooden breastplate. M'Baku growled, and T'Challa nipped him, scratching blunt nails down polished, tempered armor.
"Do you still carry that device of your sister's for clothes?"
"Really? Now?" T'Challa asked, though he nodded, breathless. M'Baku turned them around, bracing T'Challa against the wall, burying his mouth against T'Challa's neck, breathing in the warm skin scent behind his ear. Grass skirts crinkled as he pushed the swell in his breeches against T'Challa's ass, rubbing himself against it as he fumbled open T'Challa's trousers. He spat on his palm. T'Challa stiffened with a gasp he stifled against his own arm as M'Baku grasped him and started jacking him off, roughly.
"Pity about the rush,"
M'Baku whispered against his ear.
"If we had the time, I'd open you up. Do it slow. That night, you took my fingers like you couldn't wait to take more. Think you'd look good on my cock."
He laughed as T'Challa groaned and shoved his hips back against M'Baku's.
"Your Majesty."
T'Challa made a panther's hoarse and guttural hunting moan. M'Baku pressed his cheek against T'Challa's throat, curling his free arm around T'Challa's waist, holding him closer. He listened to the rumble shake through T'Challa as he rocked against him, let an ancient impossibility seep deep through his skin to his bones. Bast's spirit always simmered close enough to touch through violence and sex, twin base emotions that were just different shades of hunger. M'Baku let T'Challa thrust against his grip until he grew abruptly still, locked up in ecstasy, soiling M'Baku's fingers, the wall. Sure, his device was convenient. M'Baku inspected his clean palm and the wall, then caught T'Challa's wrist as he reached for M'Baku's belt.
"No time for that."
"Doesn't seem fair," T'Challa said, his eyes still hot.
"Oh, now you're interested in fair,"
M'Baku smirked. He did want more. He wanted to push T'Challa to the ground, strip them both to the skin, taste him in intimate places. M'Baku wanted to hustle them both back to his chambers, spend the whole day in bed. But there would never be time for something like that. Not with who they were.
Now get going. We both have a lot of work to do.
He pinched T'Challa's ass, making him flinch and yelp. T'Challa pretended to scowl, catching M'Baku by the chin, rubbing his thumb through the bristle of his beard.
You don't get to tell me what to do either, he said, and pulled M'Baku down for a bruising kiss.
M'Baku hauled him closer when they broke for air, and they kissed until General Okoye politely cleared her throat from the stairwell. T'Challa startled back with a badly stifled laugh.
Until next time, oh great gorilla, he said, with a quick smile.
M'Baku rolled his eyes. Get out of my city.
Back within the seat, the Jabari contingent had already left. They were hitching a ride to Benin Jata with T'Challa. M'Baku found Saathna chatting animatedly with Nakia and Truthseeker Captain Hibiza. The other four Truthseekers who had come with Hibiza were studying readouts transcribed for their Kamoya beads. Everyone fell silent as M'Baku walked into the room. The Truthseekers looked wary. Nakia, curious.
So I hear you people have come to do my cousin's job for her.
M'Baku told Hibiza, who drew herself up quickly.
Not at all, O great gorilla. We are simply here to observe, and provide advice, should your head of security require it.
And do you think she'd require anything from outsiders?
M'Baku growled. Hibiza stiffened, the other truth-seekers tensing up. Saathna started to laugh.
Stop it.
M'Baku grinned at her, snickering, even as Nakia raised her eyebrows and Hibiza thinned her lips.
Forgive my cousin, Saathna told Hibiza, for he is young and has a terrible sense of humor.
I'm not young. We're nearly the same age,
M'Baku said.
You're young in the head, cursed like all men.
Saathna made a shooing gesture. Go away. You're just taking up air and space right now. Don't you have a backlog of supplicants to work through?
M'Baku allowed himself to be chased off, still chuckling. He was in a sober mood by the time he got to the audience chamber, and as he sat down, he was composed again. He nodded at Silumko.
Send in the first supplicant.
Nakia didn't remember much of her first visit to the fastness. She'd been exhausted, heartsick, running on empty. Going to the Jabari had felt like a betrayal. Coming back was like deja vu, picking up details that she'd seen before but hadn't catalogued. The war dogs knew that Jabari technology was nature-based, but seeing it in person was startling, even if the Jabari were clearly trying to hide as much as they could from their visitors. Something was keeping the fastness at a pleasantly cool temperature despite the snow, and Nakia was sure that the Jabari had some way of communicating with each other over long distances. Strangest of all were the godkeepers, the all-female shamans of the Jabari, tasked with their rituals, keeping traditions, and taking care of those sacred creatures. With no gorilla now in residence in the fastness, Nakia wasn't sure what other creatures the godkeepers were referring to. It was difficult not to gawk. The godkeepers were dressed starkly, in plain white fabrics, barefoot, their arms, throat, and ankles encased in wooden bangles. They had powdered their foreheads with the chalk that M'Baku and his primes had worn to the warrior falls. Other than that, the godkeepers wore no decoration, their hair shorn down almost to their scalps, and they stood in a neat file behind the oldest of them, who was mixing something solemnly in an earthenware jar. Saathna had pointedly herded Nakia and the Truthseekers to a corner of the dome-like room that she'd called the Resonance Chamber. The walls were ribbed with Jabari wood and unsettling, strangely even whorls that hurt the eye to follow. At the center, cuffed to stone chairs, the two Jabari prisoners were stiff with unease and fear. Truthseeker Captain Hibiza nervously cleared her throat, though she pitched her voice low. What exactly is going to happen here? She asked Saathna. The godkeepers heard we hadn't gotten anywhere in our questioning and wanted to have a turn, Saathna replied. Hush now.
you'll get a chance to ask your questions. Ibiza subsided, if reluctantly. Nakia tried to appear unobtrusive and relaxed, clustered with the other truth-seekers behind Ibiza. The godkeepers were spreading out around the chamber, taking up even positions close to the walls. They pressed their palms over their chests. At some hidden signal, they began to hum, a stuttering cadence that grew louder, louder, somehow refracted from the wood in the walls, until Nakia's jaw ached, the sound rattling in her skull. One of the truth-seekers clapped her hands over her ears. The old godkeeper before the prisoners reached into her jar, flicking some sort of ground powder from it across their faces. The prisoners began to thrash, gasping, heaving against their cuffs. The godkeeper raised her hands, palms up, and the prisoners arched in their seats. Then they fell back, limp, breathing shallowly, drool collecting at the corners of their mouths. "Speak," the godkeeper told Saathna. Ibiza flinched. "Why did you kill Anathi?" Saathna demanded.
"Not us, not us," said the prisoner known as Tuma, in a listless tone. "Tetu."
"Why did Tetu kill Anathi?" Saathna corrected herself.
"For chaos, for chaos."
"Who is Tetu?"
"Shamanic, within the arteries."
"All Jabari shamans are women," Saathna said.
"This is a different path."
Saathna ignored the frown of the elder godkeeper. "Where in the arteries?"
"Everywhere," Tuma said, with a dreamy smile. "Tetu is everywhere."
"What is his goal?" Saathna asked.
"The goal of the people."
"So he's behind the bombing in Brininjata?"
"A bomb was made, but there was a mistake. Bad structural collapse. It was only meant to kill the marks, not civilians. A man has to die for his mistakes,"
Tuma said, shuddering.
"Still more will die."
"What do you mean, more will die?" Ibiza demanded sharply.
"There are bombs, other bombs," said the other prisoner, known as Eki. "In all the cities, a big one under Brininjana."
"Where?" Nakia asked, a chill finger curling up her spine.
"We know not. Only Tetu knows. There will be no more mistakes. Only the unnecessary will die."
Tuma smiled again.
"This is what Tetu has promised. A clean slate to begin again. To grow a new garden. One that we deserve,"
Eki mumbled. "Why were two mining tribesmen kidnapped and killed here?" Nakia asked. "In Saba and Kokokeli?"
"Their cousin was unwise. Brought them into the plan. Misjudged them. They were not ready for a war. They wanted to report the people to the truth seekers. They were taken here, and we killed them here. Left them in the collection place,"
Tuma said.
"We were merciful,"
Eki said, bowing his head.
"They never woke up. Nothing personal."
Ibiza's fists were clenched tightly. She exhaled and took in a slow breath. "Where's Tetu now? Can you take us to him?"
"Everywhere. Tetu is everywhere. You will all understand this. Soon."
Tuma grinned, so broadly that Nakia winced.
"Tetu's work is already here.
Seathna started for the door, snapping orders at the primes beyond. They scattered in different directions, even as Seathna sprinted for the closest stairs. Nakia hurried after her, Hibiza at her heels, though Hibiza waved her one truth-seeker to remain with the prisoners. "M'Baku?" Nakia asked, keeping pace behind Seathna. "Holding court at this hour." Seathna took the stairs up two at a time. They dashed past surprised primes, past staff who stopped to stare, past the waiting chamber of supplicants, until they were on the audience floor of the seat, all but tumbling past the perimeter guard. Beyond, by the open view of the fastness, M'Baku was rising to his feet in surprise.
"What?"
he began, even as one of the supplicants who'd been in the chamber beyond darted past Nakia, bowling a metal sphere towards M'Baku, which began to glow a bright green. Nakia reacted, because war dog training was indelible. She leapt forward, twisting into a slide, scything the ball away from M'Baku with a kick and out into the open air, even as Seathna pounced on the supplicant. There was an ugly, whispering sound as the ball hovered impossibly in midair. Primes cried out in surprise as their spears leapt from their hands like errant fish, striking the ball, as did the decorative shafts hung over the throne. Thus festooned, the ball sang, a shrill sound. Then it was falling, dulled, to the ground far below. Had the ball rolled behind M'Baku, those spears, every sharp piece of wood in the room... Slowly, Nakia stood up. The supplicant was a Jabari woman, snarling in Seathna's grip.
"Freedom!"
she cried, as primes grabbed her from Seathna.
"Freedom for the people!"
"Take her down to the godkeepers," Seathna said curtly, "and search the others."
"My thanks,"
M'Baku said, glancing at Nakia. "Count my debt to you paid," Nakia said, with a nod. But for Jabari intervention on the field above Menegnai, she would be dead. The rest of the day passed less dramatically. Whatever the godkeepers were using to get the prisoners to talk, by the time Nakia and Seathna returned, they had already passed out. And would take days to recover, apparently. If at all. The new prisoner was left in the cell to cool down. Seathna took Hibiza and the others through the existing evidence, even showing them the chamber in the arteries where the murder had likely taken place. Late in the evening, they were all invited to dinner at Seathna's house. Like most of the houses in the fastness, it was made of Jabari wood, its door intricately carved. No two doors in the fastness were the same, as far as Nakia had seen. Dinner was with Seathna's family. Her father, Elder Damala, and her mother, Aisa, who'd cooked a feast of jollof rice, fried plantains, fattoush, a lentil baboti, and roast vegetables. There was even Nkomboti, Damala's recipe. The homemade brew was strong. It made Hibiza cough, but it relaxed everyone, at least. Hibiza ended up discussing some intricate honey fraud trial through dinner, and afterwards, Seathna escorted them back to their guest chambers in the seat. "You were quiet during dinner," Seathna said, once Hibiza and the others had been packed off to separate rooms. "I was intrigued. Honey fraud in Wakanda. Who'd have thought?" Seathna grinned. She wasn't easily fooled. "Easier to let others talk so you can observe." "As you say." Before walking into her room, Nakia paused. "About what the prisoners said. The bombs. There's likely one in the fastness." "Yes, I heard as much. I've prowlers come in the arteries, and we've twice checked the seat." "Either way, it'd be easier for M'Baku to move elsewhere for now." Seathna sniffed. "I've told him. The answer's no. Pride is ill comfort if everything goes up in an explosion, speaking as someone who's only just recently caught within one." "He's not inclined to run," he says. "Besides, the seat is probably as safe as we can make it. That's why they used that sphere. Anything else wouldn't have gotten past our security." "I'll take your word for it," Nakia said, with open skepticism.
"Good night, war dog,"
Seathna said, with a smirk.
"See you in the morning."
The guest quarters were comfortable, albeit not as lavish as what Naki was used to back home in the River Tribe's lands. She did a slow circuit of the room, used the washing facilities, and allowed herself to marvel at whatever design allowed an open-air drop without the chill coming in. She was studying the wooden ribs in the walls when Shuri pinged her.
Shuri, is something wrong?
No, I was really just checking in.
You?
Someone tried throwing a ball made of that vibranium alloy at M'Baku.
Is he okay?
Shuri's hologram blinked, concerned.
Yes, he's fine.
Stubborn, but fine. How's everyone else?
I've been using drones to scan Wakanda for the alloy. It's a diffuse signature, hard to pick up in small quantities. T'Challa, Wakabi, and Okoye are going to investigate what looks like a larger resonance in Brinin Bashenga.
Wakabi? Naki grimaced.
I know, right? I told T'Challa, look, Wakabi's obviously a trash fire. You guys should just dump him back at the border. But T'Challa was like, well, he's an old friend and he had his reasons.
Shuri made a disgusted sound. I guess Okoye will be around to keep them in line.
Okoye would have her hands full. I suppose Wakabi would be useful in Brinin Bashenga. It's a border tribe city. Having the first shield around would be able to open some doors. Hands smoothed down some feathers.
Oh, T'Challa is still on speaking terms with Shield Chief Kazi. He would have been good enough.
The leader of the border tribe was a philosophical and quiet soul, albeit one who had also sided with Killmonger under the advice of his first shield.
Could you find a resonance for this alloy anywhere else?
Not yet, no. I can't pick up small instances of it. There's one more thing. I sent T'Challa an emergency brief earlier, so I'm sure you've seen it, about the bombs.
Shuri nodded grimly.
I've had drones out, scanning, and everyone's on high alert. So far, we haven't found anything.
That was good.
Or not.
Keep looking. I don't think it was bad information.
There's one more thing. I've managed to isolate the frequency of the tight beam that resonates at the alloy. If it happens again, I'll be able to track it more accurately.
Good.
I feel like everyone else gets to go on a mission, but I'm stuck here.
Shuri said, a little enviously.
You're doing great, Naki said, with a tired grin. Shuri was still a child. God's willing, she would never be in direct danger again.
I hate it when you guys say that.